Can you take me back the first time, if you remember, the first time you saw Paul? First time you interacted with him?
I was getting baptized. And I can remember him at a bonfire. What's weird is I think the first times I remember him, I can actually remember him, like seeing him. Him being as if you or I are here, right? I could see the body, but I was never questioning, is anybody else seeing this guy? Or who's this? I didn't ask anyone. So, for some reason, these questions that could have so helped my understanding, I never asked. And it drives me crazy to this day. But as I got older, Paul seemed like he was on my shoulder. Not on it, but behind, just out, as if he's in your peripheral vision, right? And you'll hear his voice, and his voice was so, let me see.
If you want to go, you must understand.
But I could understand him so clear. He definitely spoke at length about God. He said that in God's garden, worms get cut in half. Does he delight in the worms being cut in half? Is he sorry that he cut the worms in half, or does he not care? Who do you want God to be? Where are the worms? And so whenever something bad would happen, I remember my grandma died, and he essentially said that God created because he weighed existence versus non-existence and decided that existence was better, and that the act of existing, or existing in and of itself, is the secret of what God is. It's like from out of nothing, something. Paul was like, I don't know, not an angel or whatever. He was like a teacher or a guide or something like that.
I'm Jim Perry, and you are listening to Euphemet, a show about the unknown and our relationship to it. On this edition, the hills of West Virginia have many shadows, some of which shirk suggestion of just following behind a roaming soul. Some shadows intend to lead. What happens when you are the sole inheritor of guidance from beyond? What happens when your shadow has a voice that only you can hear? Next on Euphemet.
Hey, I wanted to remind you guys about Empty Faces. It's this paranormal investigation delivered right to your doorstep each month. From the creators of Hunt a Killer, these guys have reimagined the art of storytelling yet again and drop you right in the middle of a paranormal investigation. They've been featured in BuzzFeed, Fast Company. The editors at Bustle are just writing about them weekly. And it's because Empty Faces is building this cult-like community around interactive investigation. There's forums, secret Facebook groups, podcasts, and live videos to help you through your sleuthing. I can't recommend a membership enough. And if investigating isn't your thing, you probably know someone who does love it. So to help support the show, they've offered a 10% discount code for our listeners, which is tracked to this message. Use the code JIM, J-I-M, and get 10% off. So head on over to emptyfaces.com and register now. Tell them that we sent you. Where are we at right now?
We are in Sutton, West Virginia, home of the Flatwoods Monster. And we're standing right outside the Flatwoods Museum.
Is this like a coal town at one point or something?
I think most towns in here were coal towns, yeah.
Past guest, paranormal investigator Greg Newkirk has driven me deep into the hollers of coal country to talk with a man he met whilst on a previous visit to the town's popular supernatural attraction, the Flatwoods Monster Museum. This monster, an alleged visitor from beyond, perhaps extraterrestrial, gave the townspeople the scare of their lives when, like some anomalous road tripper, its mode of transport suffered mechanical failure in a nearby field, leading to a somewhat accidental, now notorious, run-in with locals.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, you get a sense of nostalgia just stepping out of the van immediately, right?
It's a time machine.
Should we go inside?
Yeah.
Let's check this out.
Let's do it.
Like whenever creeks flow, the energy passes and the rocks
you know, kind of distort the water for a little bit, and sometimes you'll see minor pools forming on the side. Yeah, like the doors, like the flow. I get what you're saying, definitely. And the flow definitely flows much more this way than that way. Well, since I was a little kid, I don't know. Do you guys see, like, the clear, like, the force field here? Like, one of your fingertips? You see how it goes like...
That's the thing about West Virginia. These occurrences of hyper-normal experiences are often, yet fleeting. The South, however, does not forget easily, and these monsters, these visitors, leave a lasting impression that's not lost with time. Their influence seems to grow. The lore of it all sticks around like some coal stain. The stories, like the chip rocks from where they're born, crack open to reveal the real truth. Maybe, just maybe, these experiences are more about us than the monsters we bear. What also seems to be true is that sometimes, like shadows, they follow behind us, and other times, they lead.
When I look at, like, you can see the light at the end of them, and from the very flesh, like, from the tip of your flesh to about this far, you have a feel. To about this far, I can see it really good. To about this far, I can kind of see it.
So it kind of dissipates as it gets
further away. But yeah, you're kind of like shine. Sometimes it's really cool when you can see colors, but that's kind of more a special thing. His come out to about, like, I swear you could see it. It feels like when I run my finger through it, just the slightest tingle, like the weakest electrical, you can, like a distortion. Yeah. Basically, just, or like I'm cutting through something like a butter thing, because here it almost looks like a oh god, I can see it.
So like a,
membrane.
Like a membrane, okay.
But it's of energy, I suppose. I mean, just whatever comes off your body, every day.
We meet Wes in an old hotel owned by him and his father. The barren rooms, floors of empty space, wood and dust are like a film set. It is, at face value, the scariest location I have been in all season long, and one in which holds stories of its own. These old wooden bones, seeing transient miners and sex work, no doubt moonshine, sweat, a taste of money, and a hope for betterment. It's also, according to local papers, the scene of death, bathtubs full of blood. There's a single household lamp illuminating the second floor foyer that we're sitting in, 60 watts separating us from the cool dark surrounding, separating us from the storied past.
Well, whenever I was a little boy, I remember this old Indian guy, hat, face tattoos, named Pole. Imaginary friend or whatever. I have a half brother and half sister, but I essentially grew up as an only child. I was always alone. My both parents worked, you know, the whole story. During the summers, a lot of the times it would be Pole and I mean, just speaking, and he would tell me to do all kinds of that. You know, if I was sad, he would say, look, this is just one little episode of life. You got a long life to live. Da, 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 da. Would tell me this plant and that plant you can eat. I definitely saw him in my mind, or heard him most of the time in my mind, you know. And for some reason, Paul always knew where the bones were. Whenever I would talk about it, I would just kind of get shut down. Later in life, I mean, they knew I was for real, because people would feel... I think maybe one time my mom saw something the same time I did and apologized profusely or whatever. But at the time, yeah, I told a lot of people. I just don't think that, you know, anyone really paid attention, because maybe they were trying to keep me away from getting too far down that rabbit hole, or, you know, whatever, because I guess it could be dangerous. But, I mean, shit, since then we've all saw crazy stuff. My mom's family, they're called Sattlers. They came from this place called Wyden in Clay County. Before that, God knows where else, but they were traveling gypsy Jews, and several ghost stories from their family. Real crazy stuff. They my fourth great grandmother was dying. Third great grandma was a little girl at the time, was there watching. And they had a fence around their house because they had cattle or whatever, and they had a weighted gate. Heard the weighted gate slam, and she looked and she saw a folded sheet floating about the height as if somebody were carrying it. And it walked all the way up. It was like just floating all the way up to the door and stopped. And she went, oh my God. You know, told, it was either her grandma or her mother. I can't remember which one. This little girl told the woman who was dying, there's a sheet. I just watched it. Oh my, you know, the story. She said, oh, don't worry, baby. That's just a token. I'm going to die tonight. Sure enough, she died. So if this is an ancestral DNA thing coming from any angle, if this is any kind of hereditary thing, I don't know. Is it because I'm horribly brain damaged? Don't think so, because it happened before I was too badly, like I had too many head injuries. Am I a little bit like, you know, ooh, oh my God, a little bit crazy? Don't think so. I'm a really logical person. I look at shit from a logical perspective. I try my best to be a productive member of society. My God, I'm on town council and all this shit. It's just a fact of my life. It's not something that I let, you know, rule me. I don't just like, oh my God, you know, am I ever going to get them? I don't think about it all the time. It's just I'm quite convinced that life is so much stranger than, you know, the daily grind of 9 to 5, you know, do this, do that. Your chores, that is your life, makes it out to be. This is going to be difficult. For some reason, the memory of that day is corrupted. Like the data. I don't know how to describe it. This totally changed things for me. But okay. So, my brother and I, we live on this little kind of shacky house beside the road in Sutton, North High Street. It's middle class kind of place or whatever. Pretty nice childhood, but we had to play outside a lot, of course. This was before internet and whatever. We're going over the hill on the other side of the far side of the road across from my house, and it gets gradually steeper and steeper and steeper, and the tree cover gets thicker and thicker. There's brambles and briars, whatever. I'm ahead of my brother. He's doing something. For some reason, I want to say turtle shell. Maybe found a turtle shell or something. And I'm walking around, and there's maybe a little flat place I'm standing or whatever. And I get this. Number one, I get a feeling before anything else. I get this like something. And pole starts speaking incoherently, maybe. There's a lot of, with this, there's a lot of like, blah, 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 like weird stuff, and then it'll be seconds of clarity. It was a warning, maybe, at first, and said, oh, you know, look over there, look what could be up there, what is this? And there's a little shoe above me, like, up towards the side, and there's, it looks like trash and stuff scattered. This is heavy. I walk up to the, have to climb. It's kind of hard. I have on regular shoes and the leaves are a little moist. The hillside's moist. Climb up and slide. And I get up and it's beside all this other trash and it looks unimportant. Moss has started growing. It was, I believe, a white shoe. I remember only seeing white. God, it was about the size of my eldest daughter's shoes. And it had moss and just dirt and waterlogged. It smelled bad. Didn't think anything of it. And I believe it was maybe around this time, either Pulse would pick it up. And he compelled me in some way, say, you know, look in the shoe, what's in there. And I can remember feeling bad or something with his words. I was getting other images of something bad, right? Picked up the shoe and immediately I could tell that there was something odd about picking it up. And I shook it and long bones, black flesh. That it fell and stayed together. It didn't smell. It only smelled like wet leaves.
Hey, I just wanted to take a second to thank you for listening and to maybe ask a quick favor. Can you take a few minutes and rate, review, and subscribe to this show on iTunes? If so, you are doing me and everyone else at UFAMET a huge solid. And it's not quite esoteric knowledge that the more reviews we get, the more visible we become, and the more stories we are able to share. I really believe in what we are doing with this project, sharing human-centric experiences involving the anomalous. These stories and voices need to be heard, and because of your involvement, we get to embed ourselves into these narratives and share all that we learn, share all that we experience. So thank you in advance for rating, reviewing, and subscribing. Let's get back to the show.
Number one, the way it was handled was very bizarre. Nobody really took it seriously, but the police did take it. I think they thought, like, maybe I was this or that. But these bones were very recognizable, right? They look like long bones of a foot. And if you see, you know, just look at a skeleton, they looked like those kind of bones from my memory. And what's even more totally fucked up about this is, you know, called the cops, done all the things, right? Didn't hear anything about it. We had a fire in which our local paper, the Braxton Democrat, was housed. And so many records, so much shit from our courthouse, so many things, all kinds of stuff was lost, right? And I don't know for certain that anything was lost, but I remember I'm almost positive this made the newspaper. At first, nobody thought. Oh, even my parents were like, oh, it's nothing. It was weird. We didn't really ever talk much about it at all after that. And I think maybe everybody just assumed that they had found it and it was a bear or whatever. Because at the time, that's what people were telling me. Oh, there's a pair of bones. There's this and this is that. It was in a damn shoe. And I've done research. I worked at the West Virginia State Museum for a good long while. And I went through their records and all this shit trying to find anything about it. But, of course, this was pre-digital age and all this stuff, and I pray to God that something just didn't get lost in the paperwork. And I would almost kind of be, like, somewhat responsible for not, like, pushing the issue, you know what I mean? I just should have done more.
I think you did what you could, man. I really do. You know, when you're at a certain age, you can only do so much. The things now, in hindsight, you know, with more perspective or context or life, you know, experience, everything's different. I think about that way.
The timing of all this is weird because after I found the bones, stuff started drifting away, like with Pole and things like that. It was a couple years, maybe, tops or whatever, but it got less and less. The stuff was less severe. And whenever Pole left, he essentially said, listen, I've got business elsewhere. I've got to go. He told me that it was going to be hard or this and that, but you're going to be all right. I only had one other dream that involved him since then, and it was maybe a couple years ago. So I had a dream that I was in Mexico, I guess, and it was a oddly shabby kind of, but it was a resort or whatever. This was maybe Yucatan, Acapulco, something like that. Very tropical seeming. And I kept seeing things that reminded me of the hotel. And I was talking to an old guy. I meet him up. He's wearing a tropical shirt. And he's talking to me. And then I hear a gong. Gong. Then I hear Chalk Mole. And everybody stops for a second while they say it. And then they keep on talking. So this happens a couple times. I'm talking to somebody else. Gong. Chalk Mole. But as these gongs keep happening, I start to be able to see an image that's overlaid over top of all this. And it's of a guy. And he's Native American, right? He appears to be in a stone sarcophagus, and his face appears to be getting brighter and brighter by the light of a fire, and it'll be normal again. Dung, Chalk Mole. He resembles Pole somewhat, this man does, but this is much more of an Aztec Maya thing. I mean, huge gauges in the ear, many facial piercings, and red stripe either tattoos or something under his cheeks. And he's whispering, has a weird headdress on, going, da, 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 and I hear, and he's getting sweatier and sweatier, hotter and hotter, hotter and hotter. I wake up, like, Jesus, my God, you know, it was indescribable tension that eventually woke me up. Okay, so I go on about this and tell my family. It's like, you know, I had the weirdest damn dream. Chalk Mole, Chalk Mole, Chalk Mole, Chalk Mole. My sister's like, well, Have you tried looking up Chalk Mole? You have the internet. And I was like, no, and I didn't really know how to spell it. So I gave a C-H-A-C-M-O-L, I think I put in first, right? And the first hit I get is a Chalk Mole is, have you ever saw these Mayan statues that look like they're laying on their back and they're holding something up and allegedly that's where people, that's Chalk Mole. Okay, so I've studied history a lot, right? But I can never recall specifically learning that specific thing was Chalk Mole. And if I did, it was buried so deep within my subconscious that it, you know, whatever. It was odd that it would pop up, this Chalk Mole, Chalk Mole, Chalk Mole, Chalk Mole. And that dream had such an odd sense of urgency and the way that it was mashed up between present and past. I thought it was very strange. So I went maybe a year, got an ancestry DNA test. Whatever. I found out I'm Guatemalan. I was like, oh, that's cool. A little bit. It's not, you know, whatever. I was like, that's neat. And so I bring this up and I bring this up to my half-brother, half-sister, whatever, and say, look, and I present them with all this evidence and the thing about Paul when I'm young and all this shit. And they were like, yeah, but I think because I'm their brother, they're less inclined to believe me. However, both of them said from the time I was little that they could always tell that something was kind of odd or different or weird or whatever. And I think that perhaps all this pole stuff, maybe this ability to see auras and all these things is somehow tied in, number one, with that dream. Number two, with this pole or Native American archetype that for some reason I have in my mind. I don't know. But all this seems to follow a similar thread, and I just can't work out the mathematics to connect it. But that's really the only example of a benevolent entity that I can think of in my life.
What do you think that's trying to tell you? You have any guesses, or is there any feelings about that?
No, I mean, it's quite a dichotomy. I mean, really, there's a really nice guy, he's a really great guy, but I mean, shows you where dead feet are, or bones, and taught me so much about plants and things that I could eat dandelions and make my liver feel good because my stomach used to hurt. He said, oh, it's actually your liver, eat dandelion. Weird, just crazy weird shit that I, well, actually, I think I know the basis of whatever all this is telling me that living is so important. I can remember just him saying over and over again, gotta survive, just survive, just survive thing. Whenever anything's hard, whenever anything's terrible, just remember, survive, survive, survive. And it seems so, you know, Spartan, just, oh, survive, you know, no matter how shitty it is or whatever. But I've thought about, in times of great duress and things like this, thinking of the simplicity, it's like, oh, I mean, if I'm if I'm in it, I'm in it. I'm going to keep on living. So this may be terrible, right? But it's another breath of life. I mean, there's definitely some eloquence, much more eloquence than I think I could even put onto the shit that is told to me from within my mind, right? So to me, that says that there's something. Objectively, it's really weird stuff for somebody so young to have imagined, right? And I'm by no means like some kind of weird, funky genius or anything. I'm very normal, right? So it leads me to believe that something intelligent had to show me these things, because I did not have this knowledge before that I know of. I mean, I was a little kid. It seems as though something intelligent had to guide me for what purpose, I don't know. But he was always such about respect, love, and kindness, even to bugs and things like that. And I just feel like if I saw him, I would just feel so ashamed to be in the presence of someone who I know was so great and ask who you are, did you live where, and telling you I appreciate you so much for helping me through all this shit that you helped me through when I was a kid and things, and why, what was the purpose, why did you want to help me? If you helped other people, how old are you, what happens when we die, do you know? You know, so many things that if I would have been older, if I had just 5 minutes, I would ask. And I just never thought to ask him when I was a kid. And I regret it. But I just didn't know. I was too young. It was a blessing. If he be an imaginary friend or whatever the hell, that was truly one of the greatest blessings of my life. Because I think, you know, I've saw so many people fall and crumple and do all this shit. And my whole life I've just felt lucky. I really think it's from at least some of the common sense, wisdom, or whatever that was imparted on me from my time with him. I do miss him. Yeah.
Thank you for listening to this edition of Euphemet. I'd like to thank Empty Faces for their support. Please check out their offers in our show notes and take advantage of these really great partners to the show. It's a really fun game you guys should check out, and I think you'd like a lot. Make sure to join us on Facebook. Our group, the Society of Euphemet, is where myself and listeners go to share their own experiences and talk about these episodes. So please join us. You can also follow us at Euphemet on social media and me at It's Jim Perry on Twitter and Instagram. Please remember to subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes. Your reviews do so much to help the show, and it's so much appreciated. And until next time, this has been Euphemet. I'm Jim Perry. Keep looking up.
I wanted to talk to you real quick about Empty Faces. It's this paranormal investigation delivered right to your doorstep each month. From the creators of Hunt a Killer, these guys have reimagined the art of storytelling yet again, and drop you right in the middle of a paranormal investigation, for you to discover a universe and find answers to the unexplained. You join by visiting emptyfaces.com and applying for membership. They're growing so fast they've limited their membership to 500 each week. If you're accepted, you'll receive an email with a private link to complete your registration. From there, a package arrives on your doorstep each month, filled with physical items and correspondence that have to be decoded, deciphered, and investigated to unravel the story. And there's forums, secret Facebook groups, podcasts, and live videos to help you through your sleuthing. They've been featured in BuzzFeed, Fast Company, hell, the editors at Bustle are writing weekly about their journey. And it's because Empty Faces is building this cult-like community around their interactive investigation. I can't recommend this membership enough. And if investigating isn't your thing, you probably know someone who would love this as a gift. To help support our show, they've offered a 10% discount for our listeners, which is tracked to this message. Use the code JIM and get 10% off. That's JIM, J-I-M, for 10% off your first month. And if serial killers are more your thing, check out huntakiller.com and use the same discount code, Jim. So head on over to emptyfaces.com and register now. Tell them Euphemet sent you.